Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Metzia Daf Nun Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the Mishnah that you will find a little less than halfway down from the top of Daf Nun Hey, 21 lines from the top. The Mishnah deals with amounts of money as they relate to different areas of halacha. Ha'oino arbo'o kesef. Now, that's a point that we have learned in the past, and in fact the Gemara will ask why was it necessary to have this included here. But what it means is that the violation of mischarging, either overcharging or underpaying, is realized when one pays, let's say it was overcharged four kesef, that's four mois per sela. If you make the calculation as we have done in the past, one sela contains 24 ma, so 4 out of 24 is 1/6. So the shiur, the rate of mischarging, either underpaying or overpaying, is when it's a difference of 1/6, either above or below the market value of the item. Vahataino shtei kesef. This is a totally unrelated area of halacha, but the issue here involves how much must be claimed. What's the minimum amount of claim in a financial dispute that could that could bring the party to swear in court that he doesn't owe the money? So there has to be an initial claim of no less than two kesef. The two kesef, it's a reference to two ma'al kesef. Ma'al is a rather small denomination of silver currency. We just mentioned a moment ago, you'll find 24 ma'al in a sela. So the minimum amount of claim in order to generate a court-based oath on the part of the party claiming innocence, the claim would have to be two kesef. This is a topic that's discussed at much greater extent in Maseches Shavuos. Vahoda shove pruta. When we speak about a person who denies owing something, denial would generate the need for an oath, as we just indicated, where a claim is made, a minimum amount of two kesef, and in response to the claim there would have to be a denial of a partial nature in order for a court-based oath to be generated. We refer to that as mode b'miktsas. In other words, if someone comes and claims from you money and you say, I don't owe you anything, on a Torah level there is no need or there's no basis for generating an oath to sustain your claim or to sustain your denial. However, if you deny in part, we call that mode b'miktsas, after a claim of a minimum amount of two kesef was issued and your denial is worth a pruta, a shove pruta, you deny that amount. In other words, you say, I owe you everything you say except for a pruta, or I owe you none of what you're claiming except for a pruta. That constitutes a hoido b'miktsas, and in a situation like that, where you have a taina of two kesef and a denial of a pruta, the need for swearing is realized. An oath can be imposed. Chomesh Prutos Hein. There are five examples of halacha where a pruta is the amount of money. Haoda Shave Pruta. We just mentioned that in the context of partial confession, Moed B'Mitzvas, which generates a court shvua, a court imposed oath in order to sustain your claim of exemption, of innocence. Number two, V'ha Isha Miskadeshes B'Shave Pruta. A woman's marriage is established by her accepting that amount of money, that's a minimum amount. And if she receives that from a man and agrees to marriage, a marriage is established. Less than a shava pruta would not be sufficient. V'hanene b'shava pruta min ha-hegdish mo'al. The third point is a reference to the prohibition of deriving personal benefit from that which was sanctified. So if the value of the personal benefit that you received was a pruta, then you're in violation of me'ilah, which requires the person who is in violation to bring a sacrifice and to pay the Beis HaMikdash for having violated that prohibition. Number four, v'hamotze shove pruta chayav lachris, one who finds a lost article, the value of which is at least one pruta, then he must announce his finding. Number five, v'hagoizel es chaver shove pruta v'nishbalo. In the event that someone stole that minimum amount of item of value from a person and then swore that he did not do so and then confessed, yolichenu achrov afilu lomodai. He must pursue the victim in order to return the item, even if it involves a lengthy journey to Modai, which is used as an example of a far away place. He is not in fulfillment of his requirement of returning the stolen article until he reaches the actual person, the actual victim. That is the case when one swore falsely and then confessed his having lied under oath. He doesn't achieve atonement until he returns the article to the victim's hands, literally, or I should say literally reaching the victim of his theft. The Gemara opens with the question that we just mentioned earlier, Tanina Chalazimna, the Mishnah that opens up with Haino Arba Kesef. We have learned that already back on Daf Mem Tes, where it said, Haino arbo kesef, me esrim v'arbo kesef l'sela shtus l'mekach. The rate of oino, mischarging, is four mo'is, four pieces of silver, when you find 24 of them in one sela. So it's four kesef out of 24. Shtus l'mekach, which is a sixth of the value of the, it's a mischarge of a sixth of the value of the item. So why does the Mishnah say Ha'ino Arba Kesef? The Gemara says Hataina Shtei Kesef Ha'ido Shavu Pruta Itzderichole. The Mishnah really had an agenda to move on with additional halachas where you find minimum amounts of money, and that additional halacha had been the initial claim of two kesef and a confession, a partial confession amounting to a pruta, then there will be a shvua imposed on the person who is claiming exemption. The Gemara asks, "Is if that's the purpose of the Mishnah, in other words, opening with Haino Arba Kesef in order to lead up to that point, but Ha Nami Tanina, that point has also been taught elsewhere in Masechah Shvuas, where it says Shvuas Hadayonim, the court imposed, the judges imposing an oath on the defendant, it arises when Hataina is Shtei Kesef Ha'ido Shavu Pruta. So far, the beginning of our Mishnah is superfluous, is redundant. The Gemara says Seifo Itzderichole. Really, it's the continuation of the Mishnah that has in it new information, Dikotoni Chomesh Prutos Hein, where the Mishnah lists off five areas of halacha where the pruta amount is the standard. So the Mishnah opened up with that intent leading up to that part of the Mishnah where it lists the five prutos. Chomesh prutos heim v'chulei, and here we have a topic heading, Nose, which you can see on the side in our margin says, Lama Tana the Mishnah Senu Lime Prutas Elu. Why did the Tana of our Mishnah choose specifically these Prutas, Velo Kolal Oino, in the list of five Prutas, Oino was not mentioned, Velo Hizkir HaPrutos Shelevi, Mevi Bebraisa Shelo, and no, and there is a skipping of certain halachas of that are pruta based that Levi includes in his Tanaic literature. Levi was the author of Brisos, and you find in a Levi source a reference to prutas that you don't find in our Mishnah. V'chein yesh l'shola hefech lama Levi, etc. Also, we'll find in Levi, who has a list of five prutas, his five don't include certain points mentioned in our Mishnah. So, very simply put, why does our Mishnah skip things Levi mentioned? And why does Levi skip things mentioned in our Mishnah? The trapezoid or volcano shape that you see highlights the expressions velisni, meaning let our Mishnah teach. And you'll find also Tana Didon, also another expression referring to our Mishnah. Why does our Mishnah not mention? And we'll see in the Gemara where these markings have relevance. That is as far as references to our Mishnah. The double underline, you see, highlights different topics. So if you skim down the page, you'll see Ha'ino is mentioned. Later we find Yeshivas Hadayonim. After that, Aveda, Bepruta, Hegdish. These are the various topics that the Gemara will focus on. And the inverted volcano shape highlights Levi. The markings will gain much greater relevance as we go into the Gemara itself. The Gemara asks, V'lisni nami ha'ino pruta. Let our Mishnah cite as an example Ono at a pruta. For example, Rashi cites this example. If you had an item that was valued at 6 prutos, overcharging by 1 pruta or underpaying 1 pruta would constitute Ono. So that the din of Ono could have the amount of a pruta could have relevance to Ono as well. You notice we have numbers in the Gemara. On the side, we have a little starred note, and the note reads as follows: Mispur v'simun elu heim l'toyeles b'hemshech ha-Gemara. The numbering and the double underlining that you see has value for the unfolding Gemaras. The Gemara continues. The Shom Muva Rishima Shel Prutos Levi the Shoneh Mimishnah Senu. There, in the continuation of the Gemara, a list of Prutos is brought, cited by Levi, that's a different list than in our Mishnah. So the numbers that you see here will have relevance later. We'll try to make the connection then. In the meantime, the question is, why does our Mishnah that lists different halachos of prutos not give as an example Ono being at a pruta? As we said, an item that would cost 6 prutos, and if there's a mischarge of 1 pruto, there's a violation of Ono. Omar Rav Kahana Zoy Seimeres, Rav Kahana says, from the absence of Ono bepruta, we learn Ein Ono leprutos. A mischarge of a pruta does not constitute a violation of the sin of oino. Rashi says the minimum amount of currency that would constitute oino is in terms of an isar. An isar is a is a silver coin. A pruta is a copper, the smallest denomination of copper coin. So a mischarge of one pruta would not be viewed as a violation of oino. The Levi Omar, yesh oino the prutas. Levi disagrees with what Rav Kahana said, and Rav Kahana was explaining our Mishnah. Levi, in effect, disagrees with our Mishnah. V'chein toni Levi b'masni seira. Levi included in his Tanaic literature, in the Brisos, Ono as an example. And here we have Levi's list. Chomesh prutos hein. Hoino v'pruta. An item that's worth six, and there was a mischarge of one pruta, that's oino. V'hoido pruta. The Kiddusha Isha Bepruta, the Gezel Bepruta, the issue of Gezel, we saw that in our Mishnah. And Rashi points out the Gezel Bepruta, Lechayvay Korban Shvoyim Nishba Lesheker Ulalicho Acharov. If one swore that he did not steal, and in fact he did steal, so he lied, and the amount happened to be a Pruta, he would have to bring a sacrifice for the false oath, and in order to achieve kapara, atonement, he would have to pursue the victim in order and hand it to him directly. Now, the fifth example we did not see, v'yeshivas hadayonim bepruta. Rashi says, v'yeshivas hadayonim bepruta, lemi shiesh lo edim. Someone who has witnesses, o shechayev moide, v'daycheu mi l'shalim, or person confesses, I owe you money, but he doesn't want to pay. He's pushing off payment. Yeshvu hadayona v'yachufo. So the judges gather and force him to pay. So yeshivas hadayonim, the ability to establish a court case, to have judges sit in the matter. If the issue concerned a claim of a pruta, that's enough to generate a, let's say, the court sitting in session. We have a list of five here, and we had a list of five in our Mishnah. For your convenience, we've included on the side a little chart. I hope everyone sees in the margin a little chart where the double star marking appears. One list is Mishnah, the other list is Levi. Under the Mishnah, we have numbered five, and these five you'll see in our Mishnah. These numbers correspond: Hoida, Kiddushin, Me'ila, and it's the issue of Hegdish, and number four was Aveda, and number five, Gozel. Levi has a list of five as well. We're in presenting the list of Levi, you notice we have aligned those points that are parallel to our Mishnah. We've included under Levi, so Hodah, you see the little two in parentheses corresponds to the two in Levi's source. In our marked Gemara, Levi's number two is the same as our Mishnah's number one, the case of Hodah. The next under Levi is Kiddushin. That in Levi's list is number three. The next example that Levi has is Gozel. So that is Levi's number four example, which happens to correspond to our Mishnah's fifth example. So you notice, so far in Levi's source of five prutos, there are three that appear in our Mishnah. Levi has another example, which is not in the Mishnah, Oino. That's his first example. And number five, Yeshivas Hadayonim. So Levi has five examples. What Levi does not include in his list of prutos are Me'ila, which our Mishnah had as number three, and Aveda, which our Mishnah had as number four. Now we go back to the Gemara. V'tana didon. My taimo lo kotoni yeshivas hadayonim. Why did our Mishnah not cite Levi's fifth example as an example of pruta, the case of yeshivas hadayonim? The Gemara answers, Tana le Gezel. Our Mishnah made reference to Gezel, the fifth example. Rashi says Tana Gezel, Mekeva the Tana Gezel the Pruta, from the fact that theft and the relevant halachas is when a Pruta was stolen. Shmamina Mamona hu the Kafina. We see from that that is considered Mamon. That's considered a financial issue. And the kafina means in a case like that, the judges could impose their will. So even without stating yeshivas hadayonim in an explicit fashion, from the fact that gozel es chavero is mentioned in the Mishnah, and part of gozel es chavero involves forcing the thief to repay, so we understand that the court would sit in session if that's the amount in question, one pruta. So just to repeat maybe the obvious, even without stating yeshivas hadayonim bepruta, the Mishnah indicates that through its example of gezel. Question. Umi lo tani gezel v'katani aveda? If you're saying that our Mishnah is, we'll say, sensitive to redundancy, well, the Mishnah teaches Gezel, but it also teaches the case of Aveda, that, namely, if the Aveda is worth one Pruta, you'd have to announce its finding. Wouldn't I have been able to figure that out from the fact that Gezel is considered Gezel if you're dealing with, if the amount is one Pruta? So as Rashi said, one Pruta is Mamon. So if you find an item worth a Pruta, you would have to announce. Why does the Mishnah spell that out? The Gemara answers, and notice we have a long marking, Hanoch itzderichale. These examples of Gezel and Aveda have to be spelled out. And by saying one, I can't rely on that to figure out the other. Gezel, what's unique about Gezel? HaGezel mechavero shavepruta v'nishbalo yolichenu achrov v'afilu lemodai. As far as Gezel is concerned, the Mishnah had a purpose in spelling it out in order to tell me the halacha, to tell me the law that you have to return it to the victim's hands, even if it involves a long trip, like to the country of Modai. Aveda, hamotze aveda shove pruta, chayov lehachriz, v'afal gav dezol. One who finds an item, and at the time he found it, it was worth one pruta, he has to announce the finding, even though between the time of his finding it and his time of announcing it may have cheapened and become worth less than one pruta. That nevertheless is not an exemption from making the announcement that you have found a lost article. The Levi, my time o lo toni Aveda b'pruta. Why does Levi not teach that law in his list that Aveda of a pruta requires announcing? The Gemara says, Tana le Gezel. Well, Levi has in his list the case of Gezel, number 4 in Levi's list. And we see from there that one pruta is considered mamon. And that would apply to finding a lost article as well, that it's considered significant, and hence you have to announce its finding. Question. Umi lo kotoni gezel, the kotoni yeshivas hadayonim. As far as Levi's list is concerned, there seems to be redundancy. He teaches gezel bepruta, and from that we establish that that's a significant amount of money, with a minimum significant amount. And based on that, I would understand that judges could be assembled for that amount in order to impose their will on the defendant. So why, if Gezel has been taught by Levi, and you see he's willing to teach another area that could very well have been derived, and yet He states it explicitly anyway. So teach Aveda as well. The Gemara answers, Yeshivas Hadayonim Itzdericha Lei Lafuke Midarav Ketina. It's not as we thought that Levi teaches Yeshivas Hadayonim simply as a repeat point from the case of Gezel. Not so. But rather, Yeshivas Hadayonim had to be taught by Levi for the purpose of excluding Rav Katina's approach. The Yom Rav Katina, based in Niskokan Afilu Lepochos Mishava Pruta. Levi wanted to make the point that we rule that based in assembles for a Pruta, to the exclusion of Rav Katina, who said that based in can be assembled, the court can be assembled for a matter even less than a pruta. For Levi, now you notice we've inverted the volcano shape. We did so a few lines before, as we're now focusing on Levi. Another question: my time alo kotani hektish. Why did Levi not include hektish, the number three that you see here corresponds to the original appearance of Hekdesh in the Mishnah number 3. So the Gemara answers, Bechulin komairi bekotchim lo komairi. Levi was focused on matters that are pruta related in the realm of the common, the mundane, not the realm of holiness. Ella, Tana didon de komairi bekotchim, our Tana, who was willing to talk about a pruta in the context of that which is holy, nisni meiser bepruta. Teach the halacha that when you redeem your meiser sheni produce, if you have a very small amount of fruit or grains, the minimum amount that lends itself to redemption onto money is a pruta's worth of fruits. Less than a pruta's worth of fruits, being that it's so insignificant, does not latch, its holiness won't latch on to money. So the amount of a pruta has relevance to Meiser Sheni tithing. Why does our Mishnah not mention that? The Gemara answers, Keman Domar, was our Mishnah says that you won't be able to redeem if the fruits are such in value that their fifth is not a pruta. Namely, if you have fruits that are, let's say, worth three prutas, can you redeem them? According to this approach, this man de Omar that the Gemara is referring to, you won't be able to redeem them. Why not? Because a fifth of three prutos is less than one pruta. The minimum amount of fruits that lend themselves to redemption, according to this approach, would be fruits worth four prutos. One fifth of four, when you take four, divide it into four parts and add one, five-fourths, so to speak, that one that you're adding is a pruta. So the Gemara says, why is Meiser Sheni the pruta not mentioned? Because even if the Meiser Sheni was worth one pruta, it was worth two prutos, three prutos, still you wouldn't be able to redeem it because the fifth is less than a pruta. That's what the Gemara means when it says Kemandomer ein bechumsho pruta. The Gemara asks, fine, that's the opinion of our Mishnah, Velisni Chaimish Meiser Bepruta. Why not include that as a pruta example? That Meiser Sheni produce lends itself to redemption when one fifth of the principal equals a pruta. The Gemara answers, the reason that wasn't included is Bekarna Kamairi Bechoimish Lo Kamairi. Our Mishnah is dealing with laws of a pruta as they relate to principal values, not fifths that are added on. Gufa. Here we refer to that which was mentioned in passing earlier, and now we focus in on it. Omar Rav Ketina, Beis Din Nizkokan Afilu Lepochos Mishave Pruta. Beis Din assembles to adjudicate cases worth even less than one pruta. Mosiv Rava. Rava raises an objection from the following Tanaic source. V'yesa shirchoto min ha-kodesh yishalem. That's the pasuk that you find in Vayikra Perek Hey. And the Gemara continues at the top of Omid Beis. L'rabois pochos mishove pruto lehishavoin. This teaches me that you have to return that which is worth even less than one pruta. And we understand from the context of this pasuk, which in which kodesh appeared. It said the es asher chotam min hakodesh yishalem, when the violation was a violation within the realm of kodesh, you have to compensate. Even if the amount of violation was less than a pruta, we infer lekodesh in aval lehedyot lo. This requirement applies to benefit from kodesh, from that which was sanctified, but not an amount that would have relevance to a hedyot. Now this then would be against Rav Ketina. I should have mentioned that the posuk cited as a shechotim and akudish yishalim, posuk in Vayikra Perkei posuk design, is referring to the prohibition of meila, the unlawful benefit, personal benefit derived from that which was sanctified. But we see that the concept of pochos mishava pruta has relevance only to kodesh, not to common matters. And as we said, that's a problem for Rav Ketina. Elo, I itmar, hochi itmar. If Rav Ketina had said something, he would have said the following. So here we have our base, our second version of Rav Ketina. Omar Rav Ketina, im huzkiku beis din l'shove pruta. If a court case started as a result of a claim of one pruta, goimrim afilu lepochos mishove pruta. The Rashi adds here, goimrim afilu lepochos im chozar hasheni v'tovoi pochos mishove pruta. Kodem sha'amdu beis din misham nizkokin lo. If A claimed from B a shove pruta, and B claimed from A something worth less than a shove pruta, if the court had not adjourned from their initial case involving a pruta, the continuation of the disagreement between the litigants concerning a value of less than a shava pruta continues. And as the Gemara itself continues and says, Tchilas hadin bo'inon pruta, gemar din lo bo'inon pruta. The initiation of a court case, you have a pruta as the minimum amount required. But the end of the case, the continuation of the case, continues even if the matter under discussion is less than a pruta. In the spirit of the previous Mishnah, we continue now with another list of five. Chamisha Chumshin Hain. There are five cases of Chomesh. Eluhain, and here they are. Now, just take careful note of how we've numbered the Mishnah. You see, numbers in circles, they are the five. There are a number of subcategories, and they appear in letters. So, number one, ha'oichel, truma, utrumas meiser shel demai, v'chalo, v'abikurim, moisiv chomesh. If one, a non-kohen, who's not entitled to these, eats it, he has to pay a kohen the value that he ate and add a fifth. Then the list includes one who ate the truma tithe, or the Trumas Meiser is the tithe that a Levi separates from the Meiser Rishon that he received. A Levi separates one tenth of that, it's a tenth of a tenth, and gives that to a Kohen. The Meiser Rishon itself was a tenth of the original producer's harvest. The Levi, in receiving Meiser Rishon, has to separate one tenth of that, and hence we refer to it as a tenth of a tenth. Another example is the Trumas Meiser of Demai. After tithing from your produce that you bought from an ignoramus, you tithed 10% and declared it Meiser Rishon. One tenth of that you'd have to give to a Kohen. That's called Trumas Meiser of Demai. Vachala is the dough tithe given to Kohanim. Bikurim, first fruits. All of these are under the category of the term Truma. Even Bikurim is referred to in the Torah by use of the word Truma. So in all of these cases, if a zar ate them, he has to add an addition to the principal value that he consumed, he adds a fifth. Number two, v'hapoide netirevai u'maiser sheni shelo moisiv chomish. Two examples of redemption and the need to add a fifth. In the case of produce, one who redeemed netirevai, those are fruits in the fourth year of the tree's life. Fruits from the fourth year are not to be eaten outside of Yerushalayim. If you have a large amount and you can't bring your harvest of fruits in its fourth year to Yerushalayim, you have the option of redeeming it onto money. And that in that redeeming process, you have to add a fifth. And Meiser Sheni, one who redeems his Meiser Sheni. The word shelo means your own, as opposed to someone, an outsider, redeeming your produce. If an outsider redeems your produce, then he is exempt from adding the fifth. So the word shelo is a reference to one who is redeeming his own, either his own net derivai or his own Meiser Sheni. The third example of Chomesh, Hapoida es Hegdeshoi, Moisir Chomesh, one who redeems something that he had sanctified, he adds a fifth. Number four, Hanane Shove Pruta Mina Hegdish, Moisir Chomesh. This is a reference to Mi'ila that we alluded to earlier, one who derives personal benefit from Hegdish, so he calculates the value of that benefit and adds a fifth and pays that to the Beis Hamikdash. Number five, v'hagozel es chavero shove pruta v'nish baloi moisiv chomesh. One who stole from his friend, swore that he did not and admitted, so he has to pay the victim the principal value and add a fifth for having sworn falsely. We have a sugya starting Omar Rova, which is a very interesting sugya by way of Gemara structure. A number of names will appear in this Gemara, which is characterized by an extensive give and take discussion, and we've used triangles to highlight that nature. We've circled key names in this discussion, and on the side of the Gemara under our topic heading, we've written Biur. We are learning. We're trying to clarify. Im asu chachomim chizuk ledivrehem kishel Torah. When it comes to rabbinic matters, do the rabbis strengthen their rulings, their teachings, their requirements to make their dinim, their rabbinic laws, like Torah laws? We'll see practical applications of that when we get into the Gemara. Under the Mivneh, the structural note The circle represents Hadgosha Shemus Litalis Abayla Kamon. The circling of the names will have great value to us when we get to Abaye later in the Gemara. Later in the Gemara is a reference to the midway point on Daf Nun Vav Amud Aleph. In the course of today's shiur, we're going to be spilling over the standard Daf Yomi quota so as to maintain a continuum of thought. Another marking, the triangle we made reference to, is a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track. With the triangle point facing up, kushos, the inverted, represents shuvas, responses. You have question, answer, etc. throughout the Gemara. When at each point a name appears, there is an accompanying topic that each one of the mandaonrim are referring to. Later, and we mentioned that that's a reference to Abaye, will give us an overview of the give and take in the Gemara, evaluating the validity of the question and the answer given by the various rabbis respectively. And when we get to Abaye, you see that he rises to the occasion to make a point. He'll be making a long point, in effect a long response to something that Ravina had asked before. All of that's by way of introductory notation. It sounds a bit abstract, but we'll find greater meaning to everything as we go into the text. The Gemara. Omar Rava, Kashya le Rebbe Lozer. The Mishnah had in it a point that was difficult for the Amora, Rebbe Lozer ben Pedas. Rebbe Lozer here is the Amora, Rebbe Lozer ben Pedas. What was bothering him? Trumas Meiser Shel Demai. In our Mishnah, mention was made of a non-Kohen eating the Trumas Meiser tithe removed from produce that one received from an Am Ha'oretz. And we call that type of produce Demai. In principle, the majority of ignoramuses of Am Ha'oretz took care of their tithing. There's a rabbinic stringency that says even though the majority of the ignorant ones take care of their tithing, there's a significant enough minority to warrant our imposing upon you tithe again. And in doing so, if a non-Kohen eats that Trumas Meiser of Demai, you'd have to add a fifth. V'chi asu, the Gemara asks, V'chi asu, Chachomim chizuk l'divrayim kishel Torah. This is what's bothering Rebbe Lozer. Do the rabbis strengthen their ruling? The whole need for taking off, for tithing Trumas Meiser from Demai is a rabbinic expectation. Now, in addition to that, if a non-Kohen eats that, the Mishnah indicates you have to add a fifth, treating it the same way as you would a Torah level tithe violation, where a non-Kohen would eat, let's say, Trumas Meiser of Vadai, of stuff, of produce that definitely needed to be tithed. There, we know you add a fifth. That we know from Psukim in the Torah. Did the rabbis impose a stringency upon their requirements to make their requirements like Torah requirements? Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Shmuel, Rav Nachman quotes Shmuel. Note we have a very long answer marking. Ha Mani, Rabbi Meir, Hiyawar, Mishnah, which says that the Chomem also Chizuk L'Divrem Kishol Torah, is in along the lines of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir is the author of our Mishnah. Diomar, Asu chachomim chizuk ledivrem kishel Torah. Yes, the rabbis strengthened their rulings like, as if they were Torah level laws. Desanya, and here we have an example from Maseches Gittin. We're interested primarily in Rebbe Meir in this source. That's why you'll notice we've dashed, underlined his name and his point. We can de-emphasize the Chachomim position here. This source deals with someone who appointed an agent to bring a divorce document, a get, from outside the land of Israel to a woman residing in Israel. The agent has to declare Befonai Nechta, Befonai Nechta, we'll see these words in the text shortly, which literally means in my presence it was written and in my presence it was signed. Those words are tantamount to a declaration that the get was done properly, it was done l'shma, and we had a saw machlokas rabba and rava in Maseches Gittin, one holding that this is testimony of it having been done l'shma, or it's essentially a verification of the signatures. This is a rabbinic requirement. For once again, the expectation or the requirement of an agent conveying a get to make that announcement to the woman who is receiving the get in Eretz Yisrael, that requirement is a rabbinic requirement. Let us say a woman received a get from an agent and who came from abroad, and the agent did not make that announcement. She received the get. She went ahead and married a second man, bore a child. Rabbi Meir will tell us that the child is a mamzer, is illegitimate. Now, why? She received a get. She's a divorced woman. She's not considered a married woman who went off with some other man. That, of course, would result in the child being an illegitimate, a mamzer individual. But she received the divorce document. The only thing that was lacking was a rabbinic requirement. Well, we see from here that Rebbe Meir's position is that that the rabbis strengthened their law, namely their requirement of b'fanei nechta, b'fanei nechtam, strengthened it to the point that if it's absent and the woman marries a second man and bears a child, the child is illegitimate, as if she received no divorce at all. Now, let's see this in the Gemara. Disanya. Hamevi get minisayam. An agent brings a get from outside Israel to Eretz Yisrael. Nosnu lo v'lo omar lo b'fonai nechta, b'fonai nechta. He gave her the divorce document, but did not declare b'fonai nechta, b'fonai nechta. Yotzi, the man who married her, if she married a second man, he must release her, you separate from her, divorce her, v'havlad mamzer, and if she bears a child with him, the child is a mamzer, is illegitimate, divrei Rebbe Meir, by being illegitimate, so all the laws that apply to mamzerim will apply to this individual, and included in that is he cannot marry a regular member of the Jewish people. V'chachomim omrim ein havlad mamzer, according to chachomim, the child is not a mamzer. Ketzad yaseh, what should be done if she received the get without that announcement? Yitlenu mimeno v'yavzer v'yinenu lo b'fnei shnayim. The agent should take it back and then give it to her again in front of two. V'yomar lo b'fonai nechtav v'fonai nechtam. Now, the Gemara, in making its point, spells out what we said before. Ula Rebbe Meir. In focusing on Rabbi Meir's opinion, Mishum de lo omar lo befonai nechta, befonai nechtam, yoytzi vavlad mamzer, because the agent did not say that announcement, that declaration, which is a rabbinic declaration. Are you telling me that the second husband has to divorce her and the child born from that union is a mamzer? Just because the agent didn't make that rabbinic declaration, the Gemara says, "In, that's right. That's what we're saying. Rabbi Meir Litame, this is Rabbi Meir consistent with what he has said elsewhere. The Omer Vamnuna Mishmeidula Omer Hoya Rabbi Meir. It has been said in the name of Ulop that Rabbi Meir says, Kol Hameshana Mimat Be'ah Shetovu Chachomim Begitin Yoitzi V'Havlad Mamzer. Anyone who deviates from the format established by the rabbis in divorces, the remarriage to a second party must be discontinued, must be undone, she must be divorced, and the child that resulted from that marriage, from that second marriage, is a mamzer. Once again, Rabbi Meir has as a principle, deviating from the format the rabbis established in the realm of Gittin results in mamzerus. So as far as whatever was bothering Rabbi Lozer about Trumas Meiser Shel Demai having to add a fifth, Shmuel answers, that's according to Rabbi Meir, who we see in the case of divorces treats rabbinic laws as if they're Torah laws. In the danger of spoiling the suspense, we'll say, waiting for later on, I'm going to tell you now what is presented later as a point of difficulty, but we're not going to analyze it now. We have to move on. But just for the time being, Rabbi Elazar was bothered by a halacha concerning rabbinic. Intervention, rabbinic strengthening when it comes to the adding of a fifth in tithing. And Shmuel responded, yeah, that's quite common, we'll say, and if you accept Rabbi Meir's worldview. Yeah, but Rabbi Meir's worldview, as presented by Shmuel, involved the case of Eishes Ish, of a married woman and her remarriage, that comes under the general heading of Misas Beis Din, an area of halacha that's punishable if it's violated. It's punishable by court execution. That's a very weighty area of halacha. So you can imagine in a case like that, the rabbis exercised extreme caution and strengthened their teachings in view of the severity of the topic. Does that mean that the rabbis would be so severe and full of expectations when it comes to halacha that's not punishable by court execution? So that in a certain manner of thinking, Rebbe Lozer wouldn't necessarily have to accept Shmuel's response, namely, You're showing me that the Chachamim also chizik b'divrei in severe matters that like Eishes Ish, Misas Beis Din, court execution cases that could lead to court execution, and expect me to apply that to Trumas Meiser of Demai, which is purely a rabbinic area of halacha. Well, we just presented to you a problem, but for the meantime, we just finished an answer. Namely, you do find Chachamim Asu Chizik D'Vrayim in the form of Rabbi Meir. But we continue. Mosiv Rav Sheshes. We have a little starred note on the side. Tamsis HaKushya. We're going to see a question which, by way of our markings, by the way, is a long question that takes you to the fourth line from the top of Daf Nun Vavam and Aleph. So our starred note tells you Tamsis HaKusha, the essence of this question, Nira Behemshich, we'll see as we go on, Sherebi Meir Eino Machmir B'demai Kemo Bevadai, where Rebbe Meir, in fact, is not so strict when it comes to Demai as we are in the case of Vadai. Demai is the area of doubtful need for tithing. Vadai means definite need for tithing. Within this question that Rav Sheshes presents, we deal with some points that were mentioned earlier in our perek that has to do with procedures of redemption. What can you redeem onto what? Without reviewing all of those points that we have mentioned in the past, let us continue in the Gemara, understanding that we're dealing with procedure, acceptable procedure with regard to redemption. We're dealing here with the redemption of Meiser Sheni of Demai. Mechalin Oisai, Kesef al Kesef. If you had redeemed your original fruits onto silver coins, you can transfer the sanctity from silver coins onto other silver coins. Nechoshes al Nechoshes, from copper coins onto other copper coins. Kesef al Nechoshes, from silver coins onto other copper coins. Unechoshes al Haperos, and transfer from copper coins onto fruits. V'yachzor v'yifte es haperos, divrei Rebbe Meir. You'll redeem those fruits and transfer their sanctity onto money, and that money you bring to Yerushalayim. So all of the examples that we've seen so far are cases of redemption that took place, transfer of sanctity from one onto the other outside of Yerushalayim. And if you happen to have redeemed from copper money onto fruits, you then redeem those fruits onto cash and bring the cash to Jerusalem. V'chachomim omrim, yalu peiros v'yochlu v'yushalayim. Chomim say if you redeemed onto fruits outside Yerushalayim, you have to bring those fruits to Yerushalayim. The Rashi points out that as far as the Chachomim are concerned, we don't expect you, we don't require you to redeem from the fruits back onto money. If you want, the Chachamim say, you can bring those fruits themselves, the fruits that received redemption, that were absorbed sanctity from money that had whose sanctity had been transferred onto these fruits. The point that is maybe obvious, but the fruits that we're speaking of right now are obviously not the original fruits that constituted this tithe. Those original fruits he had redeemed onto money, and that money he then redeemed it onto additional fruits. And now the issue is, what do I do with those fruits? Rebbe Meir says, well, those fruits, you've got to redeem them, transfer the sanctity onto cash and bring the cash to Jerusalem. And the Chachamim give you the option of bringing those fruits as they are. We continue in the Gemara. Omi mechalalinon kesef al nechoshes. One of the examples, and we dashed underline it in the source, was Rabbi Meir allowing redemption from silver coins absorbed Meiser Sheni sanctity and having that transferred onto copper coins. V'ha Tanan, but we have learned with regard to Meiser Sheni of a Vadai nature, is real Meiser Sheni that you tithe from produce that you grew, for example, the following: Sela Shel Meiser Sheni V'shel Chulin Shenis Arvu. If a Sela coin that had absorbed Meiser Sheni sanctity got mixed up with a common Sela coin. Sela is a denomination of currency. So you have two coins that got mixed up, and I can't identify which is which. And I want to benefit from the Chulin coin. I want to buy something with it. What do? You don't know which is which. Maybe besela mois, you bring a sela worth of copper coins. The oimer, and make the following declaration: kol mokoim sheyeshna sela shel meiser sheni, which wherever the sela of meiser sheni is, mechulelas al mois halolu. The sanctity is to be transferred onto this pile of copper coins. Uborer es hayofe shebahen. Now, at this point, I think we can agree that the two silver sela coins, neither one has meiser sheni kedusha to it. It has just been transferred. Wherever the kedusha was, wherever the sanctity was, it was transferred onto this pile of copper coins. So now I have these two sela coins. Uborer es hayofe shebahen. I choose the nicer, the better one of the two that were mixed up. Umechaloloi oleha. And then I take those copper coins and I transfer the sanctity from them onto this, onto the sela, onto the silver sela coin. Now that silver sela coin has Kedushas Meiser Sheni. The copper coins and the other sela coin are chulin. We continue at the top of Daf Nun Vav Aleph. Mipnei Shamru, what we just described, we say you can do this. Mipnei Shamru Mechalin Oisoi Kesef Al Nechoshes Midochak. The process of taking the mixed silver coins, the two selas, and transferring it onto the copper coins is something that can be done. You're going from silver onto copper. If you're under pressed circumstances, you can go from silver onto copper. Lo shiakayim, not that you should leave it like that. Elo shechozer mechalon al hakesef. As we saw, then you expect to go further and transfer the sanctity from the copper coins back onto a silver coin. In this Tanaic source, we saw movement from silver onto copper. Katani mihas, it said, however, here by the Meiser Sheni of Vadai, of the certain Meiser Sheni, which is the source we just finished, Mechalin Midochak. Only if you've got pressing circumstances would we allow you to do that, to go from silver to copper. Midochak in, shelo midochak lo. But if you don't have, if you have pressing circumstances, in means yes, then you can do that. But if you don't have pressing circumstances, you cannot do that. And yet, when it came to the Meiser Sheni of Demai, we saw as a matter of course, Kesef al Nechoshes. We had dashed underlined that as well. As you can see, about 8 lines up from the bottom of Nun Hei Amid Beis. So, what conclusion are we to reach? Says Rav Sheshes, that Rebbe Meir does not treat Meiser Sheni of Demai with the same level of severity and stringency as he treats Meiser Sheni of Vadai. That's the Meiser Sheni tithe from produce that had to be tithe. So when you're dealing with something rabbinic like Demai, we are less restrictive. So how can, and this is what's Rav Sheshes then asking, how can you claim that Rabbi Meir is Asu Chizik, Asu Chachomim Chizuk L'Divrem Keshel Torah? Here we have Rabbi Meir not doing thusly. Omar Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef is a response. Afalpisha Meker Rabbi Meir Bipinyono, even though Rabbi Meir appears to be lenient with regard to matters of redemption, Machmirhu Bachilah. So when it comes to the eating and the necessary penalties involved with regard to eating the demai, he is in fact strict and views the rabbinic violation of eating demai as eating Torah prohibited meiser sheni. And the main point, and we wrote it in between the lines, our Mishnah deals with eating. It said in our Mishnah, one who is ochel, trumas meiser of demai. So that Shmuel's original answer stands. By the way, as far as markings are concerned, you can see that Shmuel is introduced by an inverted triangle, and here we have Rav Yosef with an inverted triangle. So Rav Yosef is coming to confirm Shmuel's approach that when it comes to rabbinic matters, Osu Chachom Chizuk L'Dvarim Kishol Torah. Ah, you'll say that Rabbi Meir seemed to be lenient when it came to redemption. That's redemption, but our Mishnah wasn't dealing with laws of redemption. Our Mishnah was dealing with laws of achila, desanya. And here we have a Tanaic source, which Rav Yosef is citing for his point. This source deals with demai. And it says, Lo hitiru limkor demai, el lesitayim bilvad. The allowance to sell untithed produce that one got from an ama oretz, for a person who's called a chover. A chover is a person who's diligent with regard to matters of tithing. A chover is not allowed to sell demai to others until he, the seller himself, tithes, unless the seller is a wholesaler, he's a sitan. A seton, he sells in bulk, in large quantity. So then he, a seton that's a wholesaler that happens also to be a chover, a diligent person, has this permission. Ubal habayis, a private individual, benkach ubenkach tzorich la'aser, divrei Rabbi Meir. He must tithe before he sells. Whether he sells a large amount or a small amount, he is a private individual. So a balabayas, a private individual who bought produce from an amoretz, whether he resells his stuff in large quantity or in small quantity, he has to tithe before he sells. Rashi points out, because the purchaser who is buying from a private person thinks that he's getting stuff that this guy himself produced, and since he's a chover, he certainly would have tithed. So purchasers from balabotim, purchasers from private individuals, are not going to tithe. So we insist on the balabayas tithing. Now, this is an area of halacha that deals with achilu. We're not dealing with redemption. We're dealing with laws that pertain to the eventual eating of it. And what do we see? Rabbi Meir is machmir with regard to achila. V'chachomim oimrim, echad asiton v'echad balabayas, whether it's a wholesaler or a private individual. Mocher, he can sell the demai. V'sholeach l'chavero, v'nosei lo b'matona, v'eino choshesh. We don't have to dwell on the opinion of the Chachamim, but they are lenient, we'll say, in terms of the laws of selling of demai. Rashi, he explains, V'chachomim omrim, echad siton v'echad balabai shebo limkor b'mido gaso k'derech hamashpien v'chederech hasitonis, a private person that sells in large quantity, like a wholesaler, mocher shachal chavero, he can sell, he can send to his friend shechazoka kol amochrim v'noisem midagas v'chesed shalom yisru demai heim. People who sell in large quantities, it's assumed that they did not tithe. V'lokech me meiser, one who buys from them will tithe v'ochel, and eat it after he tithes. What's the point that Rav Yosef is making? As we said, when it comes to matters of eating of demai, the Chachamim asu chizuk l'divrayim kishel Torah. They impose chumras and restrictions. Masiv Ravina. Now, Ravina raises a question. Notice we have a very long question marking. In the course of this long question, we'll also see the use of a double underline, which we'll see the value of that as we get further into the Gemara. Another marking that we see that will figure quite prominently later will be the crown marking. What we're trying to do with the crown is emphasize two terms that will refer to, we'll be able to refer to these Tanaic sources simply by the one word. You've got, the first word is Nachtom, and we'll explain that a little later, and the next word later down on, further down on the page, is the word Palter. Mosiv Ravina Halokeach min Hanachtom. Nachtom is an individual that has to do, that deals with baked goods. Well, he sells baked goods. One who buys from a Nachtom, that is an Amoritz, that's not knowledgeable. Me'aser minachama latzen, enes minatzen enes alachama. You will have to tithe because of your doubt concerning whether he tithed, whether the one you bought from took care of the tithing, so you have to tithe. And we allow you to tithe from chamo, is hot bread, fresh bread, on tzonenes, cold bread. And in other words, you can take off the tithe from the chamo to exempt the tzonenes. Uminat tzonenes al hachamo. And the other way around as well. Vafilu mitfusim harbe divrei Rabbi Meir. Even if the defusim, the forms, the molds of the various breads are, we'll say, different shapes. That's Rabbi Meir. Now, you see here an example of a kula, a leniency within the realm of eating. We're not dealing here with redemption. We're not dealing with pidyon. We're dealing with tithing in order to be able to eat. So far, Ravina is developing his point that Rebbe Meir is lenient even with regard to matters of eating, contrary to what Rav Yosef claimed. Rav Yosef said, "Afapisha meker Rebbe Meir b'pidyon machmiru b'achilaso." Here, Rebbe Meir is giving me a leniency, allowing me to tithe from one form, one shape, to exempt another one. What is the leniency in that? We'll see later. We'll develop this idea later. The Gemara expounds on Ravina's, on the source here. Bishlama minatzonenes alachama. I understand that we can allow that, tithing from poor, lesser quality to exempt better quality. So that the actual tithe, when you give this the miser tithe to the Kohen, to the receiver, you're giving him poor quality. You're exempting good stuff by tithing from the tzonenes, from the cold stuff. Well, it works. Kidder Rabbi Eloi, based on Rabbi Eloi's teaching. Diom Rabbi Eloi, minayim l'turim min ha'ruah l'yofesh trumaso truma. From where do we know that one who uses poor stuff, raw, bad quality stuff, to exempt other good quality stuff, that it's an effective tithing? Shenemar, the pasuk says, v'lo sisul of chet barimchem es chelboi mimenu. The Torah exhorts us to tithe in a preferable fashion. When you give your tithe and you want to exempt your produce, tithe from chelbo. Chelbo means literally fats, the rich stuff. Use as the tithe, or separate the good stuff to exempt the rest of your produce, the rest of your dough, whatever needs to be tithed. Use the good stuff and give that to the kayin. Now, the Torah says, "V'lo sisul of chet," do not bear a sin, baharimchem, when you are separating the good stuff, as chelbo mimenu. What do we see from here? That if you tithe the good stuff, you won't bear a sin. If you don't use the good stuff as the tithe, you don't present to the kayin, to the receiver of the tithe, the chelbo, then you will bear a sin. Im eino kodesh, if by tithing the poor quality stuff, in this case the tzeinenes, the cold loaves, if it doesn't gain sanctity, i.e. it doesn't become truma, it doesn't become chala, when you're tithing, it, in other words, if nothing takes place because you use poor quality stuff, nesias chet lomo, why is there any sin born? The fact that there is a sin, it shows something took hold. Mikan, from here we see, l'tori min ha'ra l'yofeh, from here that a sin is born, we conclude that when you tithe from the raw, from the poor quality stuff, and use that to exempt good quality stuff, shetrumasa truma, that it's an effective tithing. And it becomes labeled as truma, and you have fulfilled your basic requirement. Elo'afilu mitfusim harbe, the additional teaching in the source we saw above, that you can tithe from different molds. In other words, you bought from a nachdom, a bread provider who's an amoretz, you got from him several different loaves, different shapes, one's square, one's round, one's rectangular. You can tithe from the triangular shaped loaf and declare that as tithe to exempt the other shapes. Ah, why do we allow that? Lechush duma osi lafrushi min achiyuv ala poter min apoter ala chiyuv. These different shapes might very well have come from different producers, different bakers. One baker took care of the tithing, the other baker didn't take care of the tithing. So I can end up having a situation where I'm declaring a tithe from that which is chayev to exempt something that's already been tithed, or the other way around. I'm going to take off something, a loaf from, declare as a tithe stuff that's exempt to constitute a tithe for something that hasn't been tithed yet. That's not acceptable. You can't use stuff that's exempt from tithing to constitute a tithe for something that needs tithing, and vice versa. We have a little star in the Rashi that takes you down into the lines under the Gemara text. Reading Rashi there, V'asu chizuk shel Torah, if as was claimed by Shmuel and Rav Yosef, that the rabbis made their laws tithing from, let's say, from demai rabbinic tithing as if it's Torah. Bishlam min atzoynenes alachamo. I understand you can do that. You can tithe from a cold loaf and exempt a hot loaf. Afal pi shachama yofim min atzoynenes lo chayshina. That wouldn't bother us, kiddur rebeloi. That is based on Rebbe Loi's teaching of lo sisu lo chet. Elamin tfusim harbe, but as far as from different shapes, nechush dumu mafrish min apoter, etc. So we see from here, we see from Ravina's point, a problem, a kasha on what Rav Yosef said. We see extreme leniency, whereby we allow even from different molds, taking from one to exempt another, and I'm not concerned with this problem of maybe a makfish from chiyuv al poter or from poter on chiyuv. Omar Abaye. You'll notice here we have a long brackets, and I want to point out ahead of time that the markings here are based on a very, very brief comment made by Rashi, but very significant. And if you notice the Rashi that appears where we left off, the word kashya, he says, lo gar sinan. The word kashya means, and here we leave you with a difficulty, that is not to be included in the text, and in our Gemara we don't have that word. Why is that not in our text? Why don't we leave things as a kashya? The Abaye terutzi komentaritz. Abaye answers. In other words, Ravina presented a question. Abaye answers it. So, we have a long bracketed section. And we have a starred note in our margin which reads, Acharei hasugrayim, after the bracketed section, Muva hityachasut shel Abaye lekushis Ravina. We'll see Abaye's attention, his answer to Ravino's question. Besochas Ograim, within the brackets, Yesh Sikur Shel Abaye Al Malach HaGemora Mitchilosoi from Dafnun He Omid Beis. We'll see a wonderful presentation made by Abaye of all of the various opinions and the give and take we saw in the Gemara up till this point. And in the bracketed section, we'll be making extensive use of all the circled names that we've seen till now. But as far as structure is concerned, let's skip the bracketed section momentarily. Abaye appears as a response. And do note, by the way, a very long Abaye marking that we've included to the side of the Gemara text. Omar Abaye. Ravina, notice we skip Ravina ad the Moisev Minachtom. As far as Ravina raising an objection to Rav Yosef from the example of Nachtom, l'sayale mi pater. He could have actually brought support to Rav Yosef from the case of pater. Ah, what does pater mean? Pater is someone that might be considered a baked goods distributor. He's a wholesaler. He gets merchandise from many different suppliers. Now, what does it say in this source? This nan. Halokeach min a pater, one who buys baked goods from a pater. Again, we're dealing with a pater that's an amoretz. I think that we can make that assumption, being that our whole discussion concerns the rabbinic, the need for tithing on a rabbinic level. So one who buys from a potter, maser min kol dufus udufus divrei Rabbi Meir. You can't separate from one shape on another. Rather, if you bought a number of loaves, several triangle-shaped loaves, several round-shaped loaves, several square-shaped loaves, rectangular-shaped loaves, you have to tithe from each shape by itself. Now, this is the opposite of what we said before when you bought from a nachtom. Elo mai is loch lemeimar. See, Abaye goes on to say, what are you going to have to say? How do you resolve that? How do you resolve the difference between the way we deal with the nachtom and the various shapes and the way we deal with the palter and the various shapes? Palter mitre tlosa gavra zovin. The palter is a, as we say, he's a wholesaler. He buys from a number of different bakers. So that in the case of buying from a palter, you can assume that the square-shaped loaves were produced by someone other than the one who prepared the triangular-shaped loaves. And likewise, the one who made circular loaves, he's a third producer, third baker. In such a case, you can't tithe from the triangular loaves to exempt the square loaves, because as we indicated before, the guy that produced the triangular loaves, he might be someone that's diligent in tithing, so his loaves are already exempt, and you cannot use exempt material to serve as a tithe to exempt something that hasn't been tithed yet, and vice versa. So in the case of the palter, the different shapes are evidence or demonstrate that they came from different people. Tlosa, Trey Tlosa, two, three different people. Nachtoim Nami, the Nachtoim as well meaning in contrast, he is a small merchant. Mechad Gavra Huzavin. He is a retailer, if you will. He gets his stuff from one supplier. So since he gets his stuff from one supplier, okay, so he's the one that whoever baked for the Nachtoim's retail operation, he had different shaped molds, but it all comes from the same guy. So if the guy is a diligent person, so I don't really need to tithe. And if he's not diligent, if he was an Amoretz, so I'm using the guy's same guy's triangle loaves to exempt his square loaves. That's quite all right. So as far as Abaye is concerned, Ravino's question falls away. The idea of being mitfusim harbe, being that you got the different shapes from a Nachtoim, that's not a sign of leniency, so that we are able to reinstate Rav Yosef's approach. Notice the markings. Abaye had an inverted triangle that can be overlaid upon the inverted triangle above that Rav Yosef was introduced with. Abaye is strengthening Rav Yosef's position that when it comes to matters of eating and rabbinic tithing, we in fact are restrictive. As you can see, when you buy from a punter, you can't separate tithe from one shape on another. They came from different people, and you would get into the problem of being mafrish from Torah and apoter al achiyuv and achiyuv al apoter. We had a long bracketed section, which we'll get back to in a minute. But before we do that, I should say correction. Let's go now to the bracketed section. Within the bracketed section, you'll notice a double underline marking. And on the side, under our Mivneh heading, we indicate that this highlights a Machlokes Abaye V'Rava im Tshuvas Shmuel L'Rebbe Lozer Hoysa Matima. Was Shmuel's response back on Nun Hey Amid Beis, was his response to Rebbe Lozer a good response? Was it fitting? And we introduced this problem earlier, but now we're going to deal with it in the text. Bear in mind, we're going to be making reference to a lot of names, all of whom had been circled up till now. So now, the Gemara, in the brackets. Abaye, we go back to the inverted triangle, Omer Abaye. Rebbe Lozer Shapir Kokashi Alei. Rebbe Lozer had a legitimate question, namely, do the rabbis treat their rulings as if they're Torah-level rulings? We saw in the Mishnah that one who wrongfully ate Trumas Meiser of Demai, he has to add a Chaimish, just like one who wrongfully ate Trumas Meiser of Avadai, of definite stuff that definitely needed to be tithed. That was a good question. Do the rabbis elevate their rulings to be like Torah-level rulings? Shmuel's response was not good. Lo Shapir, wasn't good. It wasn't effective. It wasn't accurate. Why not? Well, the kashyale the Rebbe Lozer misa debidei shamayim. The topic bothering Rebbe Lozer was the topic of hafroshas truma. Hafroshas truma, tithing of truma, trumas meiser, etc. All of the cases that Rebbe Lozer was referring to come under the heading of truma, and the penalty for eating truma in the worst case scenario, if someone deliberately was a non-Kohen ate truma, he's punishable by death at the hands of heaven. There's no court intervention. There's no court execution. Umeshani leShmuel. Shmuel responded to Rebbe Lozer's query by citing a case of stringency of the rabbis on their rulings from a topic of Misas Beis Din. Let's read that phrase again. Umeshani leShmuel Misas Beis Din. The case of Get Isha, the issue of divorce, establishing a woman as being a non-married woman is a matter that could lead to Misas Beis. And if a married woman cohabits with another man, she's guilty. That couple is guilty of court death. And Misas Beis is a more severe realm of violation than Misa Bidei Shamayim. Dilma Shaini Misas Beis in the Chamira. It could be that death at the hands of court is considered more severe. So in a realm of law like that, the rabbis imposed stringencies to be like Torah. So Abaye's observation right now is that Shmuel's response to Rabbi Elazar wasn't such an accurate response. Now, we'll see later that Rava disagrees with that observation. Let's continue though in the Gemara. Rav Sheshes lo shapir ka moisiv lei. Rav Sheshes raised a question on that which Shmuel taught, but his question wasn't a good question, wasn't an accurate, wasn't a balanced question. The Koamri inhu Misa, Rebbe Lozer and Shmuel, they spoke in terms of Misa-related things. One Misa Bidei Shemayim, and Shmuel spoke about Misa's Beis, and even more severe. Umoisiv Rav Sheshes, Lav. Lav is a mere negative command, punishable by Malkus, by lashing. That's a lower level area of law, more lenient area of law. And what was Rav Sheshes trying to do? Was trying to show that in that area the rabbis are lenient. What relevance does that have to areas of greater stringency, of death at the hands of the court? So Abaye says that Rav Sheshes lo shapir ko moisiv lei. The Koamri inu Misa, they spoke about Misa, and Moisiv Rav Sheshes lav. Dichtiv, the pasuk says, by redemption matters of Meiser Sheni, lo sucha lecho bisharecha, that if you don't redeem the produce, you cannot eat it, lo sucha, you cannot lecho eat it in your own communities. And one who does eat unredeemed Meiser Sheni, so he's violation of this negative command. All right, so that in the realm of rabbinic laws concerning negative commands, we find leniency, but that doesn't serve as a question on the fact that the rabbis are stringent in capital cases. So Abaye is of the opinion that Rav Sheshes' question was uncalled for. Ulamai de Moisiv Rav Sheshes. And according to Rav Sheshes' question, Rav Yosef Shapir Komishani Lei. Rav Yosef gave a good answer to Rav Sheshes' question. Namely, Rav Sheshes tried to show that there's rabbinic leniency. So Rav Yosef says, yeah, there's rabbinic leniency in the realm of laws of redemption, but you're not going to find rabbinic leniency in the realm of eating. And our Mishnah, which was the basis for Rabbi Elazar's question in the first place, was a matter of eating. Ella. And here we have the Gemara we learned before. So all of this was Abaye's, we'll say, review of everything that we've seen till now. Ella Ravina. And here Abaye addresses the issue introduced by Ravina and says, Ravina, your question is really no question. Ella Ravina, ad de moisiv mi nachtom, until you come along and ask from the case of nachtom, l'sayale mi palter, you could have offered support to Rav Yosef from the din of palter. In other words, you were asking, you Ravina were asking on Rav Yosef from the halach of being makfrish mi tfusim harbe, you could have supported Rav Yosef from the case of Palter, the Snan, Alokech Min Palter, Masrimin called Fus de Rabbi Meir. No, you can't. We don't have a leniency for you in that case of in the case of different shapes different shapes of breads. You can't mafresh from one on the other, because we are, in fact, like Rav Yosef said, when it comes to matters of tithing in order to eat, matters of achila, we are concerned, we are strict. Ah, so then how come in the case of the Nachtom were we lenient? What are you going to have to say to resolve these two sources that we have marked with the crown shape? Palter mitrei tlosa gavra zovin, Nachtom nami mechad gavra zovin, hu zovin. The palter buys from different suppliers, therefore we cannot allow you to shape, to separate the tie from one shape to exempt another. The Nachtom buys from one supplier, a singular supplier. Therefore, you can tithe from one shape to exempt another. Rava Omar, Shmuel Shapir Komeshani Lei. Shmuel, in responding to Rebbe Lozer's question concerning Chachoma Mosu Chizuk B'Divrayim Kishel Torah, Shmuel's response is a good response. It's not like apples and oranges, so to speak, that Abaye claimed. Namely, you're trying to respond from a case of court execution to a topic of death at the hands of heaven. Shein misa b'olam. They're both, they have in common the concept of death. So, it's apples and apples, so to speak. Rebbe Lozer was raising his question concerning a topic that has misa associated with it, albeit Misa B'Dei Shemayim, and Shmuel answered, yes, we find Chachomim Asu Chizuk Ivrim in another case of Misa. Case of Misa is based in a Shliach that doesn't say B'fonei Nech, B'fonei Nechtam, according to Rabbi Meir, Yoitzi Vavlad Mamzer. Even though it's a rabbinic requirement and it was violated, the resultant child will be viewed as a Mamzer, as if a Torah level law was violated. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.